George Carlin once said, "It's called the American Dream because you have to be asleep to believe it." And that's exactly where we are, asleep, but with all the lights on, and an eviction notice and a vision board sharing the same fridge magnet. Somewhere between a warehouse worker timing bathroom breaks with an app and a foreclosure sign flapping like a sad flag on someone's lawn, the dream quietly wheezes in a hospice bed, clutching the oxygen tank while Jeff Bezos sells his tickets to space and influencers hawk NFTs that look like pixelated blobs. Someone assures you are art. You know the dream, right? Home ownership, stable jobs, upward mobility, promotions, family security. Basically, the idea that if you obey the rules and work hard, that life eventually treats you kindly. It's the story your parents probably bought into, and the one Hollywood sold us, the myth that's stitched into every poster of a white picket fence. Only now, that fence is splintered and rotting, and someone already sold the lawn to help pay off the loan on a failed business. Now, I'm not here to mourn it. I'm just here to examine how it collapsed under the weight of its own lies and how we're left standing in the rubble, trying to figure out what the hell we're supposed to dream about now. Take a look at the average US citizen today. Maybe you're working three jobs to pay rent on an apartment that leaks when it rains. Or maybe you're staring at $80,000 in student debt, like it's a pet python that won't let you go. Maybe your idea of a side hustle is trying to sell your soul online for the likes and attention while the algorithm just laughs at you. That's the reality, folks. This is where we are. And not the dream, because the dream went bankrupt years ago, and we didn't even get a goodbye card. Now, it's tempting to think the dream died because of some big dramatic event, like a crash or a war. But no, it wasn't sudden. It's been unraveling rather quietly for decades. Slowly, systematically, until now it's a ghost story we all half believe. And like all good ghost stories, the scariest part isn't really the phantom, it's the reflection in the mirror. So, what was the American dream really? A neat little story. Work hard, obey the rules, buy a house, maybe a dog and a cat, and eventually live a life of quiet, suburban contentment. Thomas Jefferson probably didn't mean get a mortgage you can never pay off. Well, wondering if an app will let you pee at work. But here we are. And look, I mean, let's be honest. It was never for everyone. W.E.B. Du Bois, bell hooks, Howard Zinn, they'd all raise an eyebrow and say, "Yeah, that's nice, but you forgot half the country. Women, Black Americans, immigrants, the poor, and disenfranchised. Most of us were spectators at the Dreams exclusive party. And if you were lucky enough to get a seat, someone was ready to yank your chair out from under you with deregulation and inflation, or, you know, the occasional market crash. So fast forward to now. Homeownership is basically a game show that you're guaranteed to lose. Wages are stuck like a bad Wi-Fi signal. The job market is mostly apps deciding how much dignity you get to keep. Upward mobility has become a cruel joke that economists like Raj Chetty and Thomas Piketty have been writing about for many years. The latter, it isn't missing rungs. It's just been replaced by a treadmill that speeds up, well, every time you look away. And when you look at that, the treadmill also doubles as a conveyor belt to the debt collector. So, philosopher Alain de Botton nails the psychology behind all this. Society teaches us to dream of impossible things and then blames us when we fail. Isn't that nice? You didn't fall behind because the system is rigged. You failed because, well, apparently, you just weren't hustling hard enough or posting inspirational quotes on Instagram in a convincing enough way. And then the media keeps selling the dream in 15-second increments. Various entertainment and social media all promising that someone somewhere is living it. So why not you? Only now, the dream isn't so much about stable life, but about, look at me. I turned my life into a brand while quietly dying inside. Now, Chuck Palahniuk called it the typhoon of consumerism. And he wasn't joking, because we're drowning in it, sipping frappuccinos while being told that we're failing in one way or another. The dream did have a pulse once, briefly. Post-World War II America had strong functional unions and numerous manufacturing jobs, which are almost all gone now. It also had a government that was willing to invest in infrastructure, which is now crumbling. And believe it or not, you could actually climb the ladder without selling your soul. But then the 1970s and particularly 1980s came along, and neoliberalism moved in. And suddenly, the ladder turned into a slide coated in oil. Deregulation, outsourcing, tax breaks for corporations, collapse of unions or union corruption, all designed to enrich a few and keep the rest chasing delusional dreams of instant success. Naomi Klein would have had a field day. So yes, the myth, it promised glory, but the reality, a lot of emails from collection agencies and widespread existential dread, but also a faint sense that maybe the dream was just a marketing campaign that got just a little out of hand. Now, here's the thing. failing at it feels like a personal flaw, but really it's structural. It's the system, not you. You just got unlucky enough to be conscious enough to notice. All right. So the American dream was never really a democracy. It was more like an exclusive country club that checked your race and your bank account, your neighborhood, and whether your last name sounded right before letting you through the door. W.E.B. Du Bois knew it. Bell Hooks knew it. And again, Howard Zinn, well, he spent his entire career documenting it. The dream didn't just happen to exclude people. It was designed that way from the ground up. Even during the so-called golden age after World War II, when everyone loves to reminisce about strong unions and booming factories, the benefits were handed out with all the fairness of a casino that already knew who the winner was. And redlining wasn't an accident. Jim Crow wasn't a bug. These were features built into the operating system. And if you somehow qualified for the dream anyway, well, good for you. Somebody was already moving the goalpost while you celebrated. So then neoliberalism showed up in the 1970s and 80s wearing a nice suit and talking about efficiency. And what followed was a systematic dismantling of everything that had made the dream even remotely accessible. So deregulation, it gutted protections, outsourcing shipped jobs overseas, tax cuts for the wealthy turned into deficits paid for by everyone else. Unions got crushed. Naomi Klein calls it disaster capitalism, which honestly sounds a little too academic for what actually happened. They took a system that was barely working for most people and turned it into a rigged carnival game where the house always wins. And the 2000s came along and just kept the momentum going. The housing bubble inflated until it popped spectacularly in 2008. Basically taking retirement accounts and life savings with it. Student loans became an inescapable trap that followed people into their 40s and 50s and beyond. Medical bankruptcy became so common that it barely registered as unusual anymore. One cancer diagnosis, one car accident, maybe one unexpected surgery, and decades of careful financial planning could just vanish overnight. And your parents' retirement fund probably evaporated when Lehman Brothers collapsed. And as for your expensive college degree, it turns out employers care more about experience, which you can't get without already having experience. Funny how that works. Health insurance. Well, sure, you can have it technically, assuming you can afford it. And if you enjoy navigating a labyrinth designed by Kafka on a mental health day. Now, Howard Zinn would probably just remind us that this pattern repeats throughout history. It's nothing new. Ordinary people getting screwed by the people above them and then being told it's somehow their own, to their own benefit. And every generation thinks they got uniquely unlucky, that the system broke specifically for them. But the pattern is always the same throughout history. Boom, bubble, then crash. The dream was quietly rewritten into the punchline. Well, everyone was just too busy working to notice. And yet, the performance continues. Politicians still promise opportunity while their donors write the actual legislation. Think tanks keep publishing reports proving that mobility exists if people just work harder, conveniently ignoring that the system itself is fundamentally broken. Motivational speakers sell seminars that essentially say, yes, the game is rigged, but you can be the exception if you just buy my course. And the rest of us are just trying to make it through the week, slowly realizing the game was stacked against us before they ever sat down at the table. All right. So here's what the autopsy report reveals. The dream was never universal. The system was never designed to be fair. By the time neoliberal policies finished demolishing what little stability remained, the dream was already on life support. What we're left is now is a corpse that still looks appealing from a distance, but smells and looks a lot worse the closer you get. Okay, now, if the history lesson doesn't depress you sufficiently, let's talk about what this collapse does to people's minds. The cruelest part isn't just that the dream died. It's that we've been trained to believe that failing to achieve it is a personal moral failing rather than a structural inevitability. So millennials and Gen Z grew up marinating in a very specific lie. Work hard, go to college, play by the rules, and you'll be fine. That was the deal. Except the deal was bullshit. Because wages have been stagnant for decades while the cost of everything else has skyrocketed. Jobs are deliberately designed to be insecure now. And that's, well, it's not a bug, it's a feature. The price of success has become so absurd that even doing everything right still leaves you underwater. Then we've got a sizable swath of boomers who walk around acting like they pulled themselves up by their bootstraps, conveniently forgetting that they won the lottery with an economic infrastructure that no longer exists and a social safety net that's been basically shredded just for parts. Now, psychologists have a term for this: learned helplessness. The rest of us just call it lying awake in the dead of night, staring at your student loan, and wondering if you should laugh, cry, or just give up and become a forest hermit or something. Elaine de Bottom pointed out that when societies teach people to aspire to impossible standards and then blame them for failing, it creates a form of, well, psychological cruelty that's almost worse than direct oppression. You fail, you internalize shame, then you develop anxiety and depression, but really, the system is doing all the work. You're just punishing yourself so efficiently that external punishment just becomes redundant. And there's a generational resentment brewing that you can feel everywhere. Millennials resent boomers for pulling up the ladder and then lecturing everyone about work ethic. Boomers look at millennials and genuinely can't understand why they don't just buy houses and stop complaining. Gen Z has mostly given up on intergenerational dialogue and started documenting their existential despair on TikTok with a level of dark humor that's either deeply alarming or refreshingly honest, depending on your perspective. Every generation thinks it got uniquely screwed, when really, we're all just passengers on the same sinking ship, arguing about who should have spotted the iceberg first. And the myth of meritocracy does incredible psychological damage. When you're taught that success comes from hard work and failure comes from not trying hard enough, you, of course, internalize every setback as personal inadequacy. You know, never mind the fact that the system is structurally broken, you must have done something wrong. So, naturally, depression rates climb. Anxiety becomes just the baseline. People burn out, chasing a dream that stopped existing around 2008. All while being told by productivity gurus that they're just not hustling correctly. They just need to try this one weird trick. Now here's the sucker punch. Neocapitalism has monetized this despair. Are you feeling hopeless? Well, there's a podcast for that. Anxious about the future? Well, just buy this $5,000 course and you'll be fine. Can't sleep because of financial stress? Try these apps. Get more subscriptions. There's a profitable solution for every flavor of suffering. The culture actively makes it worse. We're drowning in manufactured success that bear no resemblance to statistical reality. We've got social media selling us all filtered fantasy. TikTok sells you the myth that virality equals success. And LinkedIn is just everyone lying about how great their jobs are, while secretly updating their resumes constantly. It's all performative optimism covering up collective despair. It's, you know, it's just a form of toxic positivity. And we're all trapped in this theater applauding the few who escaped while scrambling for crumbs ourselves. And the psychological fallout isn't just individual anymore. It's societal. Anxiety and depression, addiction, hopelessness, despair. I mean, these aren't signs that you're not meditating enough or need better self-care. They're symptoms of a broken system that's working exactly as designed. And until we can acknowledge that the dream died decades ago and that blaming ourselves isn't exactly what keeps the machine running, or is exactly what keeps the machine running, we're going to be stuck in this loop of needless suffering, repackaged as personal responsibility. Now, I'm not saying that we don't need to take some personal responsibility. We absolutely do. You know, that's true. But we live in a society that's extremely toxic and extremely damaging and is gaslighting us about it. All right. Now, if the psychological damage doesn't make you question humanity's future, the cultural shift should probably make you question whether we're even living in reality anymore. Because when the dream started dying, culture didn't process it in any healthy way. It just sort of mutated. Once upon a time, television sold us Leave It to Beaver. The dream came neatly prepackaged, stable job, happy single income family, predictable future. Everyone knew their role. Everything made sense. Now let's fast forward a few decades, and the culture takes a rather sharp turn into Fight Club, American Psycho, The Office, Jerry Springer, and, you know, reality TV that made you wonder if humanity even deserved to continue. So the dream became a punchline and like a warning label. And it also became a sandbox for nihilism. Now, Chuck Palahniuk understood this shift better than most. He knew that we'd trade moral frameworks for chaos the moment the system demanded it, and he was right. And now we're living in the age of TikTok gurus and side hustles that are basically pyramid schemes with better marketing schemes. The dream isn't about stability anymore, because stability is for suckers and people just born wealthy. Now it's about visibility and personal branding. It's about the desperate hope that if you document enough of your life and package your suffering aesthetically, and, you know, add the right hashtags, someone might actually think you made it. So we basically traded substance for optics, because optics are easier to monetize. And even escapism mutated into something aspirational. Van life, minimalism, digital nomadism, tiny houses, homesteading. You know, these aren't just lifestyle choices. They're exit strategies. People aren't running away from responsibility. They're running from a system that commodified their entire existence. And the cultural products that we consume reflect this perfectly. Literature, film, music, art, they're all telling stories about collapse and absurdity and this paper-thin veneer of normalcy that we're all maintaining through sheer force of will at this point. Philip K. Dick, Kurt Vonnegut, and, well, Tom Waits, they all understood half a century ago that this world is fundamentally screwed up, and pretending otherwise will just drive you insane. So Americans aren't dreaming about white picket fences anymore. They're dreaming about escape, and not romantic escape, but practical survivalist escape from all the debt and the stress and the meaninglessness and the constant message that they're failing for reasons nobody can quite articulate, but are definitely their fault. And the dream didn't die peacefully. It evolved into something stranger and more honest, and somehow more terrifying. And the cultural shift shows us what's really happening. We've internalized instability as normal. Precarity isn't abnormal anymore. It's just reality now. And we've learned to laugh at the absurdity because pissing and moaning about it takes energy that we need for our three side hustles. Some of us turn to dark humor for a coping mechanism. It's a method that helps us survive a dream that never really existed in the first place. So here we are, folks. The American dream is dead. Long live the American dream. Or maybe it just ghosted us while we were busy juggling multiple jobs and checking our bank balance obsessively, hoping that reality would somehow improve through sheer wishful thinking. And corporate feudalism arrived wearing business casual and carrying HR policies, and we're just the new peasants. So wage slavery got rebranded as the gig economy or side hustle, and end-stage capitalism isn't an abstract theory anymore. It's the poisoned water that we're all swimming in. Think about it honestly. You follow the rules for decades, and the system still seems to find ways to keep screwing you. Your employer monitors your every move like your government property. Student loans follow you with the persistence of a stalker who won't take no for an answer. And healthcare is like a trap door waiting to open and swallow everything you've saved. And while all this is happening, we've got billionaires buying rockets and private islands and treating space exploration like a hobby. Well, every app on your phone whispers that your worth is just determined by your productivity metrics. The dream promised dignity. Unfortunately, what you got was performance reviews and TikTok tutorials on thriving despite burnout. But the weird part is, and maybe the only bright spot in this mess, is that the unraveling isn't entirely tragic. Silver lining alert. Some people are looking at the absurdity and just opting the hell out. And you can't blame them. People are rebelling through refusal to participate. Turning to minimalism, anti-ambition movements, fan life, digital nomadism, prepping, all quiet rebellions against a system that promised everything and delivered anxiety and dystopia. Some people looked at the machine and said, well, fuck this, I'm out. Viktor Frankl and Albert Camus both understood that meaning isn't something the world just hands you. It's something you have to create yourself, usually while everything falls apart around you. And this unraveling forces us into that space, whether we're ready for it or not. Because the dream isn't coming back, not in any form that resembles what we were promised. And oddly, that's almost liberating. Because without it, you can stop pretending there's some universal blueprint for happiness and start figuring out what actually matters to you individually, or at least what doesn't make you completely miserable. The present is messy and unstable, and you know it's inexplicable in ways that previous generations couldn't have imagined. But it's also honest. And maybe that's the only gift that's buried under the dream's corpse. Clarity. Perspective. When the structures collapse and all the rules vanish, what's left is the freedom to stop chasing someone else's narrative and write your own. Even if that means living in a van, writing a blog nobody reads, or just surviving another day without losing your mind entirely, at least it's yours. I mean, look, the hard truth that nobody wants to admit out loud is that the American dream isn't coming back. Certainly not the version you were led to believe in school. Not the one your parents believed in while watching the news and shaking their heads. And not even the sanitized Instagram version that motivational speakers keep trying to sell you. Look, it's dead. And maybe that's not actually the tragedy that everyone keeps saying it is. Because without it, you're actually free. You're free from the illusion that life follows some predictable, mundane script. And you're free from blaming yourself for failing in a rigged game. And from pretending that stability is guaranteed if you just work hard enough. The world doesn't owe you a dream, and it doesn't owe you fairness or sanity. But it does give you something else, the chance to wake up and recognize the absurdity and start dreaming something real. something that doesn't require a mortgage you'll never pay off, or a job title that impresses strangers, or maybe something that doesn't require you to, I don't know, go viral to make you valid. Maybe that's a tiny house somewhere nice and quiet, or a van down by the river that you'll call home while you figure out what you actually want in life. I don't know. Maybe it's minimalism, where you own almost nothing and feel liberated and lighter for it. Or maybe it's just the stubborn rebellion of existing without pretending everything's fine when it clearly isn't. Maybe it's finding meaning in places the system never intended you to look. Camus called it rebellion. Frankl called it purpose. I'd call it surviving with your sense of humor intact, because giving up is just too depressing to consider. Look, the American dream was always just a story, sold to generations like a product with a warranty that nobody honored. It promised hope and stability and some semblance of security for a while. And then it vanished while everyone was still busy following its rules. But the wake-up call is here now. And strangely, that's liberating. Or maybe it's not so strange. You don't have to chase the ghost anymore. And you don't have to keep blaming yourself when the game was always designed for you to lose. You don't have to listen to people who insist the dream defines your worth, because in truth it doesn't. The dream is gone. But life, messy and beautifully chaotic, and usually still hilarious, is still here. And maybe that's enough to start dreaming again, but this time on your own terms. Not someone else's dream that was never designed for you anyway. Your own. Whatever that looks like. However strange or unconventional. At least it'll be authentic. In this world that's been selling lies for centuries, that might be the most radical thing you can do right now. All right, that's it for me today. Thanks for watching.